This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Blue Wire.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always by my co-host Nick Filato. Well, this is going to be a rough one tonight, boys and girls, because the Giants just lost 36-9 to a B version of the San Francisco 49ers. Obviously, NFC champions last season. That's not the team that the Giants played today, and not anywhere close to the team the Giants played today. And, you know, they fought in the first half, a sign of what we've seen, and then they totally collapsed in the second half. So let's kick it over to you to start, Nick. How are you feeling? I mean, now we've had a few hours to digest what just went down. How are you feeling?
Terrible. I mean, that was a terrible display of football against, again, this is the NFC champions, like you said, but this is not the NFC champions because literally that team is entirely beat up. There's no Richard Sherman. There's no Dre Greenlaw. There's no Nick Bosa. There's no Solomon Thomas. There's no Dee Ford. There's no starting quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. There's no starting two running backs, Tevin Coleman and Raheem Mostert.
No George Kittle.
There's no George Kittle.
There's another edge. Who's the third edge? I think they're missing their third edge, too. It's Thomas, Bosa, and then...
Dee Ford.
No Dee Ford.
It was...
No...
Richard Sherman. No Akilah Witherspoon.
This is a B version of the San Francisco 49ers.
That's being kind. B version is being kind.
Yeah. This is like... imagine if the Giants lost eight or nine starters. Imagine what you would see out there. I mean, it's unacceptable. They were completely outcoached in this game. As I thought, here's the thing. Me and Nick discussed this game the entire season. Going into last week, I was disgusted, to be honest, with the first half the Giants put together versus the Bears. Because, like I predicted, the Bears were not a good team with Mitchell Trubisky. And that was pretty obvious today when they benched him already. Anyway, we move forward into this week, and Nick was pretty confident with the Giants' chances to win this game for obvious reasons. They're facing a B version of San Francisco, and they've been competitive. What I said was, until I'm proven wrong and otherwise with this team that has literally won 12 of their last 50 games going into today, 12 of their last 50 games, I'm not expecting a win versus any team. And what happened today? They put together a disgusting, disgusting display. This roster, when you go up and down this roster, you look at the position, you look at this roster position by position. Quarterback at best average right now. Running back, terrible. Wide receiver, one good player maybe. Another who's always injured. An old veteran who's solid but not great. No depth. Tight end, average at best. Evan Engram is not the player we thought he would be.
At best.
Offensive line, below average still. Below average. So now you've gone through the entire offense and it's devoid of talent. You flip it to the other side. Interior defensive line, strength. There's one strength on this entire roster, it seems like. But there's another strength. Boundary corner. You got Bradbury. Good job. Martinez, pretty good player. Nothing crazy. He's not Bobby Wagner out there. He's not Luke Kuechly in the middle. He's a solid player, which we haven't seen a lot of, so we overinflate it. But you look at the second level, not much talent. The safeties, no one's playing up to par there. There's injury, obviously, to McKinney. Peppers left the game in the first quarter. This roster doesn't have talent. It's simply put, if you compare this to other rosters in the NFL, it's untalented. And now we're 3 years into a regime, and we have this issue. So what I want to do at some point on this podcast, Nick, because I brought it up, is I want to go over each offseason that Gabe Gettleman has had to work with and specifically focus on the draft classes, his process, and his picks to see what's happening. Because you can rally and talk about the free agencies. There's been hits, there's been misses, there's mostly misses. I don't care. If you look back at the NFL free agency, it's mostly a miss fest across the league. Very few teams do well in free agency. They took their chances, they spent money. The salary cap, for the most part, as we continue to see, as teams like the Saints re-sign Kamara, and as we've seen, there was one this week that just made a mockery of the salary cap. I forgot what it was.
Tariq Cohen.
There was another team that just made a mockery of the point is, you can spend, it's okay in free agency. You, can have misses there. But in the draft, your process has to be on point. You have to completely maximize the value of your picks. That may be trading them, by the way, and that certainly means never taking a running back at two, and you have to hit on your picks. So let's start there, Nick. I want to go over this with you. I'm going to start with the 2018 class, Dave Gettleman's first class. He inherits the following. Just 6 total picks. How did he get there? Not his fault. But one thing I like that he did is he traded JPP's contract for the 66 overall pick. That was an excellent, wise decision by Gettleman. But he still goes into that draft class, even after trading that, Nick, with just 6 picks. He has the 2nd overall pick, however, and the 34th overall pick. These are high-value picks. What does he do with the 2nd pick?
He spends it on a running back.
Generational talent. A guy that he said, gift of God, touched by the hand of God. He fell in love when he's grinding his film. He sees that play versus Iowa where he's trapped on the sideline. He makes a sick cutback. Awesome, dude. Guess what? The guy had a rookie of the year season that was general. He broke 9 records. I wrote an article about it. He had literally like 9 records broken. They won 4 games. Running backs don't win games. Running backs are the position that's most likely to get injured, and that's what's happened. Running backs have the shortest shelf life. It is a terrible decision to use the 2nd overall pick at running back. No team that's went this route besides the Cowboys, and they haven't even found success, has found major success. The Panthers are not a successful team. The Jaguars using the 4th overall pick on Fournette are not a successful team. Okay, you can't win this way. You have to do what the Colts did there. You trade back. If you're not in love with the quarterbacks, that's fine. Then you trade back. And you take Quentin Nelson there at 6, like the Colts did. Or you'd take Chubb, even. It doesn't matter. It's better to take the gamble on any other position of importance than running back. So we go to the 2nd round. He takes Will Hernandez. How good has Hernandez been, Nick? What's your opinion on Hernandez now into year 3?
I mean, I'm fine with that pick, to be honest. I don't think it's been great, but I think he's also had crap around him.
He's had crap around him. I'm willing to give him
I'm not going to blame Hernandez on Gettleman. I 100% agree with everything you're saying about Saquon Barkley. I was saying that at the time. I could not stand
it. It's a devastating decision.
And the thing that really pisses me off about that decision in general is the fact that the consensus was that Sam Darnold was going to be the number one overall pick. And when Baker Mayfield was the number one overall pick, people were like, wow, what a surprise. And Dave Gettleman didn't even wait 2 minutes before submitting the Saquon Barkley.
He waited 5 because the NFL told him you have to wait 5.
He had his mind made up.
I waited 5 was because the NFL told me I had to wait 5.
Why would you not field calls for that pick?
It's the Gettleman ways. Touched by the hand of God. He sees him in a gold jacket. But I'm going to challenge you on the Will Hernandez pick, because Will Hernandez, I'll give you all the caveats. We say this about Jones. We say this about all these. We can make all these excuses for these players who aren't performing at the level you're expecting. But one pick later is Braden Smith, who's been one of the best tackles in the NFL since being drafted by the Colts. And if you go one pick later and you get an offensive lineman who's been unbelievable, and you got Will Hernandez, who's been at best average at best. Really, at best, he was not good last season. I get it. He played next to Solder. He played next to freaking Pulley. And now he's playing next to Gates and a rookie offensive tackle, Andrew Thomas, who hasn't been that great. I understand it. But Braden Smith, on the flip side, has been excellent since being drafted. Yes. And he converted positions. And he's still been excellent.
It's also in a much better situation.
Okay, it's a much better situation. I get it, but it's pick 34. If you're not sure you're getting, they considered him a first-round talent. Gettleman said he had to do everything in his power not to trade. This is a guy who literally his approach to the NFL draft is, hold me back, tie me down to the table to make sure I don't trade up. Because every single draft he wants to trade up. He'll never consider trading down. He's never traded down in his career, and he doesn't even consider it. This draft, hold me down. He was trying his hardest to trade up. He didn't do it this draft. Good job. He wanted to trade up for Carter. He said that on record. He wanted to trade up for Hernandez. He said that on record. He did trade up for DeAndre Baker. 3 picks for a guy who's out of the NFL now and will never play another snap for the Giants. I know he got unlucky with the arrest, but Baker had a terrible rookie season and was not an immediate hit. And if you trade 3 picks, he better be an immediate hit. The problem I have with Gettleman, Nick, is that it's a process-based problem here. I don't care if you don't hit on all your picks. It's an imperfect process. We know this about the draft. I can accept this. I can understand this. But if he doesn't accept that it's an imperfect process and you want to have more swings, and if he goes into his first class like this and just keeps the 6 picks he has like he did, look at what happens. You then go to Lorenzo Carter. That's turning out to be a better pick. Carter continues to play well for the Giants, fitting a new role. But then with that pick, B.J. Hill, the next pick. B.J. Hill is a guy. Let's just go over the process with this, okay? This is year 3 of Dave Gettleman. He takes B.J. Hill at 69 overall over Fred Warner, a guy who I wanted him to take. Put it online. I know I take crap from this from some Giants fans because I was so all in on Fred Warner. But guess what? Sometimes I'm going to get this one right, and I was dead right on this one. Dead right. He completely overlooks the athletic linebacker here to take an IDL. He wants his IDLs. But then 2 years later, man, he's trading early thirds for another IDL. He's drafting an IDL at 17, and he already inherited a great IDL with Dalvin Tomlinson. And now B.J. Hill plays 15, 20 snaps a game. I just don't understand the process here. If you're going to commit to using that pick on Hill, and he's a player who's played well in limited snaps, you cannot keep pouring assets into the defensive line. You said, I've looked at all the Eagles teams that made it far. They have a rotation on the defensive line. Yeah, some of those guys are edge guys. Like, we're talking about a 4-3 defense with 4-3 ends rotating in and out. It's not just the interior guys. So
yeah, Brandon Graham's a staple of that defense as a 3 technique, and he's an edge guy. I think my biggest issue with Gettleman is by far just, like we've talked about on this podcast, asset valuation. You can't, when you're a rebuilding team, trade multiple picks to trade up for someone like DeAndre Baker. You can't.
For anyone.
You cannot make that Leonard Williams trade on a pending free agent on a rebuilding squad. That is not something that you can do.
And I don't think that you can pour this many assets into running back and interior defensive line. There's only limited assets that every GM has to work with. Gettleman, any of these guys. I mean, he's had so few assets, and he's used so many on two of the least important positions in the NFL. And I can understand the argument that IDL isn't important position, but I can't understand the argument that it's an asset that you can't get a lot of, because the Baltimore Ravens just traded a fifth rounder for one of the best IDLs in the league. The freaking Broncos traded a fifth for Jarrell Casey, another fifth for an IDL, a great IDL. These guys, there's so many IDLs making plays around. The Baltimore Ravens have made a career, and the Patriots as well, all finding IDLs in UDFA, finding them in late rounds. So he's pouring assets. What does he do the rest of this class? I'm not ready to give up on it, because he takes Kyle Uletta in the fourth round, an early fourth round pick, 108 overall. And then with his last asset, it's another IDL. This is his first class. His first class is he inherits number 2 overall, dumps it on a running back. It's a dump, because it doesn't matter how good that running back's going to be. He's not going to change your franchise, and he certainly hasn't. And that's even factoring in if you get lucky and he doesn't have injuries, because it's the most injury-prone position. And that factors in if you get lucky and you sign him to another contract and he somehow can play like Adrian Peterson level, where he's playing this long. None of that's happened so far, and that is now looking very unfortunately, because we love Barkley as a player. It's not his fault that he plays that position and they use number 2 on him. And now a guard who we're still waiting on. Two IDLs, an edge guy in Carter who we like, that's a fine pick, and a quarterback who's not on the roster anymore. And really, I don't even understand the pick anymore, considering the very next season they drafted another quarterback. And I don't know what they were thinking was going to happen there with Uletta. I mean, at the time, I kind of liked it. I talked myself into it. He had a quick release, but it's obviously clear he's not an NFL quarterback. He's been bounced around a few teams, and he's soon to be out of the league.
We've talked about some of the big mistakes, I guess you could say, that Dave Gettleman has when it comes to drafting players. And we said he hits some of these players, and he's a pretty good talent evaluator. But his mistake is that he does end up falling in love with some of these players, and he does trust his draft board a little bit too much. And if he has a higher grade, it seems like, on an interior defensive lineman, and there's a cornerback that he might have, you know, a lesser grade on, he'll go after that interior defensive lineman.
Yes.
That's something that is an issue when it comes to roster construction.
Yeah. I think it's an issue from twofold, because, like you said, it's an issue from roster construction standpoint. You have too many of one thing already. Why are you building more? But also because it's an issue of you have to factor in the importance of every position on wins and losses. I don't really see this rotation that he's built out with Hill playing 15 to 20 snaps a game paying off so far. These defensive line, we've done a decent job stopping the run sometimes in this season, not even always.
Right now, I mean, they're solid in the A gap.
Yeah, they're good in the A gap.
I gotta get to the all 22 to
they're
see.
They're good. They paid a million. Yeah. Gettleman's dumped like 30% of his valuable assets to stop the A gap. It's insanity. Like, I defended this guy for a while. I'm sorry to all the Giants fans who are listening and gonna lose me, because I am being very pessimistic. I understand that, but I've defended this guy for a while. And you look at this guy's job, his process is completely flawed from the standpoint of he doesn't understand the value of trading back and acquiring more draft assets. His process is completely flawed from the sense that he's doubling, tripling down on the interior defensive line and obviously spent the number 2 on running back. I mean, there's only so many excuses you can make for this guy, but we're going to move on, Nick, because, again, I'm giving him pass on free agency. He hasn't done a great job there, but I think it's very hard. Let's look at his next class. This is the big one, because this is one where he comes in here with so many picks. He comes in here with the 6th overall pick because the Giants were terrible in their first year under Gettleman. He comes in with 17 that they traded from Beckham, which we, by the way, we will tell you this, and not every Giants fan will tell you this, and I'll ask you if you still agree with me on this, Nick. Do you think that the Beckham trade was a good one?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, at the time, I thought, like, oh, man, they should have gotten more. But I still, looking at the trade, you were able to get Jabril Peppers, who has made it, who we thought was going to make an impact. But this season, I mean, he ends up getting injured early in this game, so I'm not going to knock him for that. But you end up getting somebody who could be a foundational piece as a second-level defender. You end up getting and drafting Dexter Lawrence, who is a complete stud, and then O'Shane Zimenez, who I think we want to see a little bit more from, but it is his second year. But yes, I still look at that, and I think it was a solid trade.
Yeah, I mean, you can also factor in it, this trade. You ask anyone who knows anything about this trade never comes together if the first part of this trade, which was Zeitler for Vernon, isn't part of the deal. And then the trade was actually reported as Zeitler for Vernon separately, but then that's only by the media, keep that in mind, by reports. And then 2 days later, the full trade comes together, and when you look at the NFL transaction page, it's reported as one deal, because that's what it was. So in this deal, it has to be factored in the Giants dumped Olivier Vernon's contract, arguably the worst in the NFL. He's still being paid for the past two seasons that he wasn't on the Giants as one of the highest defensive ends in the NFL. Go check the Browns page. He's been injured all season this year, and he was injured most of last year. Ineffective as usual, injured as always. So to get rid of that contract alone was a massive win. I personally think getting rid of Beckham's contract was a win. I know that's a controversial opinion, but Beckham to me doesn't really flip the script on wins and losses too much, and he really certainly hasn't since coming over to the Browns. So I'm giving him a win there, but we have to circle back to, we can't bury the lead here. The lead here is that the 2019 draft class, and now it's 2020 season, Nick, so now they've had a full year plus a few games. This is the class that needed to hit for him. This was his crown jewel. He came in with 6, 17, what was the first pick of the second round? The sixth pick of the second round. 17, 36, that's exactly what it was. Yeah. 6, 17, 36 or 37, 95 from Zimenez, and wait, guess what he should have also had? 65. But what did he do with 65? The year before, he's the only GM who used a third-round supplemental pick on Sam Beal, a guy who had an injury problem in college, came in with a shoulder issue that was reported that he never really got surgery on, and that was potentially going to be an issue for him at the next level. Didn't even phase him. Didn't phase Gettleman. No one used a third-round supplemental pick. You know the only team that used it? The Giants. And what did the Giants have? One of the top third-round supplemental picks. It goes by the pick that you were going to have. This isn't Giants using the 99th pick on Sam Beal or whatever. They didn't finish well the season before. They use one of the first picks of the third round to take this guy, and he's opted out, whatever. He's done nothing for this team.
But before we continue, let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. You've counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off, zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE, all one word. That's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE, all one word. Don't forget, that's BLUEWIRE, all one word, for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. I don't know about you guys, but I love to pour me some Pepsi and some ice cubes into a glass when I'm watching the New York Football Giants take on somebody. And hopefully the Pepsi can be a good luck charm if I do it in the future and the Giants can get a win. That would be lovely. But Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for people like you and me, the ones who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching.
So he already burned that asset. He should also have 66. But whatever, he still has, what is it now? He still has, at this point, 5 picks in the top 108, because Julian Love was taken at 108 in the 4th round. And what does he do? He takes Daniel Jones. Book remains to be seen there. He takes another interior defensive lineman. And again, I like Lawrence. He's been one of their better players. I totally am down with the idea of it. But you can't go the route that he went, which is trade JPP to get BJ Hill, inherit Dalvin Tomlinson, and then use this, and then trade another 3 for Leonard Williams. It's just insanity meme. And then he does the move. He trades 4-3 picks to go get DeAndre Baker. He goes up. This is his move. He's been waiting to trade up. His process is so flawed that he's been waiting to fall in love with a player that he's like, oh my God, we got this top 15 grade on him, top 10 grade on him. Let's trade up. Let's lock him in. And this is what can happen when you trade up. It's the whole reason why I'm against the process, Nick, because why I believe his process is flawed. When you trade up, you're basically saying that this is an inexact science of the NFL draft that we know is an inexact science. Russell Wilson goes in round 3, Tom Brady in round 6. You know, like, it's already proven it's an inexact science. He's saying, I figured it out. I've beaten it. I know what I'm doing. My evaluation is better than everyone else's. My eyes of film are better than everyone else's. So let's beat them to the punch. And what happens here is unlucky, obviously, but we can't ignore the fact that Baker was terrible in his first season. And not every corner in the NFL is terrible in his first season. A.J. Terrell for the Cowboys, second-round pick, he's been awesome.
Oh, he gave up Diggs. Diggs.
Oh, I'm sorry, Stephon Diggs, not A.J. Terrell. That was the Falcons guy, a COVID guy. Stephon Diggs, he gave up a big play today. It was his first big play of the game. But he's had some really awesome coverage snaps in these first 3 games. And even after that, he played really well. So, and he's not the only example. I mean, you could look across the NFL. William Jackson, he was injured his first year, but since has been a stud for them. So, I mean, DeAndre Baker looks susceptible. I'm not going to blame it all on just him not knowing the scheme. There was a chance that he was just going to be a missed pick by Gettleman, a bad evaluation. And then obviously the rest of the draft is fine. Like, he doesn't do anything crazy there. He lands Darius Slayton, unbelievable pick. Corey Ballantyne, jury's out. The tackle he traded up for, George Asafo-Ajayi, whatever. It's a 7th-round pick. And then obviously Love and Connolly, who he moved on from.
The Connolly thing still pisses me off. But when you look at Devontae Downs and Isaac Yiadom out there, it's such a liability to be exploited by these teams. And every time they're out there, you see the football being passed to their area.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do when you have breaks in your armor. Those are breaks in the armor. Yeah. And every time it's a 3rd down, a 3rd and 8, 3rd and plus, they're getting targeted in their zone or when they're in man coverage. And that just leads to the rest of the defense being out there. I mean, how many plays did the 49ers run? They ran 70-something plays. That's incredible. The Giants only ran
23 minutes
something.
Of time of possession in the first half. 23 of 30 minutes.
Yeah, they dominated time of possession. Obviously, and Kyle Shanahan, even after the game, came out and he said that he was basically getting tired of calling plays.
Oh, my God. That's like insult to injury. That's embarrassing to hear.
It's incredibly embarrassing, dude.
But I feel like, Nick, this somewhat ties into Gettleman's issue here. Why is it that every season now, especially recently, we're seeing these type of players like Devontae Downs on the field playing meaningful snaps? Devontae Downs should not be on the roster, let alone starting. But this is what happens when you continuously pour assets into one position, the interior defensive line. When you're going to do that, when you're going to use a 3rd on BJ Hill over Fred Warner, when you're going to trade your early 3rd for Leonard Williams, another interior defensive lineman, well, now you're giving up another chance to potentially find a second-level defender. That's a 2 early 3s. Those are the area you should be looking for. The 49ers, a great team, pinpointed that area, found Fred Warner. Plenty of teams are finding talent there, or at least decent second-level defenders, when you know, to play that position. But when you continuously pour in the interior defense line, I won't fault him as much for Yiadom and what's going on there. I agree he shouldn't be on the field. I agree. But he has done... He has tried to pour assets into corner. He's gotten unlucky with Baker, and he screwed up with Beal. That was, in my opinion, a very stupid decision. He should have never used an early 3rd on that, a top 65 pick in the supplemental draft. No one even used their 3rd. If anything, you want to go crazy, use your 4th, fine. I'll let you go around the top 100. You want to go 66 for a supplemental mental pick on a guy with shoulder issues coming out of college. It's a disastrous decision. He fell in love with some stupid... Basically, it was... I remember the time when they did it because the Giants were at a dire need at that time at corner. So I remember it was like a reactionary move. He's like, oh, we got Eli. We still can do this. Let's hit this need. He's very reactionary, I believe, as a GM. He tries to hit needs when they come up. I don't think that's how you're supposed to do this thing, though. I really don't think so. And I think it's been pretty obvious. Nate Solder, reactionary need pick. Bang, it backfires.
I think you had to do the Nate Solder thing as much as
And I'm fine with it. I agree with free agency misses. I'll never care about because that money's off the books or is going to be off the books mostly next year. Very few dead cap hit. Dead cap means pretty much nothing. Giants are fine on cap. They were fine with they were fine on cap for years paying Eli Manning $21 million against the cap. I mean, the cap is, for the most part, and I say this and people went off on me, it's not totally a myth, but it's as close to a myth as you can
get. It can be maneuvered is the way I think.
Yeah, I mean, you could just keep kicking it down the road like the Saints have done. And I mean, I told you, I literally, the first job I ever had in this industry was covering the NFC South. It was 2014, and I wrote articles about how the Saints are going to be screwed. They keep kicking the can gap. It's now 2020, 6 years later, and they still haven't paid the Piper there. I mean, if there's any indication that this cap is a total, a hard cap, is a total crap, it's that the Saints still haven't had to pay the Piper there 6 years later. But anyway, I'm not going to kill him for those free agency misses, but again, he seems very reactionary. And this was the class, man. This is the class. They get all these guys in. They need these guys to be playing better football right now. Daniel Jones is only playing okay football at best, and I know he has a shit situation. I completely understand that. Dexter Lawrence playing really good football, but at a position that's not impacting the game enough. It's not a shutdown corner. Imagine, I'm not saying there was one available at 17, but imagine if they landed someone who's playing as well as James Bradbury right now at the corner position at 17. Do you think this team would be better with Dexter Lawrence? With no Dexter Lawrence, Tomlinson, BJ Hill, and Leonard Williams, and then another shutdown corner, or what they have now? And you could go about that in every position. Second level defender, another linebacker. Imagine if they had a stud next to Martinez. Hey,
They kind of had one.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a small sample size for Connolly, but yeah. Ryan Connolly showed a lot of promise. I'm not going to sit there and say that he's the next coming of Lawrence Taylor or anything crazy or freaking Harry Carson or Carl Banks, but he was solid in his rookie season, and I still kind of scratch my head on the fact that the Giants kept Devonta. I thought maybe Downs murdered it in training camp. The way people were praising him coming out of training camp, you would have thought so. He had a lot of positive buzz, but he's been terrible in these first three games.
Understatement. Yeah. He's been not NFL caliber player. The Giants still trotting out not NFL caliber players 3 years into a regime. I am out of excuses for this regime. I'm out of them. And I look up and down their roster like we did at the beginning of this pod, or like I did at the beginning of this pod. And I know Nick has a little bit of a different opinion than me on this, but not too far off anymore. There's just not enough talent on this roster.
Now, I don't really have a different of opinion. I said this game specifically.
Yeah, right. This was a big game for us.
I said if the Giants don't compete in this game, it really tells a lot. Now, I always had, I would say, a suspect look at the roster as a whole, but I thought maybe if the coaching staff could possibly do something to, I need the defense to get off the field, but the coaching staff do something to adjust against this beat up freaking squad in the San Francisco 49ers on their second straight away game at MetLife Stadium.
Traveling cross country. And by the way, for those of you who didn't read the headlines last week, the Niners had a nightmare travel to play the Jets last week. They had first time their plane got hit and there was a plane there that got screwed up, and then they couldn't, something happened with the MRI machine, and they got backed up there. They had a nightmare travel session, went back to the West Coast, came back for this game, a 1 o'clock game where traditionally and typically West Coast teams struggle in, and yet they came out and completely destroyed the Giants. And I think a lot happened in this game to me and why I was never truly confident the Giants could win, even though they really should have had the edge talent-wise, was coaching. I mean, Shanahan's unbelievable. He just destroyed this. He just absolutely made a mockery of what Patrick Graham threw at him. They literally couldn't stop these crossers. It was a joke. And then finally, at the end, they figured out how to beat them in the run game. And at that point, I mean, and then on the flip side of the ball, don't even get me started there, Nick. I mean, this 49, I get it, they still had Warner out there and really good second-level players, but they were out D Ford. They were out Nick Bosa. They were out Solomon Thomas.
Dre Greenlaw.
And freaking Weatherspoon, they should have been able to target Verrett in his first game back. They should have tested him more. And yet, this offense, Nothing. They sat on that Ingram button hook, and they knew that crap was coming. The short game stuff is done. Garrett's not using any motion. He finally used some zone read. Good for him, but they need to open this thing up and start throwing downfield more, or teams are just going to sit on this quick game like the Niners did. And I get it. The Giants didn't have any possessions. I have less issues with the offense than I do the defense in this game. Obviously, the defense was just an utter joke out there, an absolute joke, time after time after time. Did the Niners punt the ball in this game, Nick? Did they punt the frickin' football in this game?
They did not.
Zero punts. The Giants forced zero punts. It was field goal drive, field goal, missed field goal that they should have made, touchdown, field goal on their first five drives. Then touchdown, 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 end of game. That's the 49ers' possessions today. It's a freaking joke, man. The Giants should have had some success, but guess what? When your only strength of your team is one corner and an interior defensive line, and you go up against an offensive line like that, a good offensive line that's played together and has a lot of talent, you can completely neutralize the IDLs. That's why the IDLs are not that important. They just get completely taken out of the game like this one.
Especially like we talked about, when you run bare, when you run tight and you protect that A-gap, you're exposed on the outside. And they just kept running outside. They did it with misdirections. They did it with jet sweeps, end-arounds, all these types of things. Yeah, Brandon Ayuk freaking running around the edge. You have the end man on the line of scrimmage getting kicked out. You have the contained defender not doing his job. You have the alley defender coming and just getting either gobbled up by another blocker who happens to be there, because Shanahan is excellent at scheming X's and O's and leaving defenders unblocked on the backside and not having them have an impact on the play whatsoever. Yeah. So you gain an edge on the front side of the play, which is something that he always does. And You saw this entire time. Every time they ran to like the strength or something like that, there was always some sort of pre-snap motion that removed a defender from the area that was going to be attacked, and the Giants can never compensate for it.
And on that Brandon Ayuk reverse touchdown, that was pretty much the game sealer. That was when you knew, oh crap, this thing is getting out of hand bad. This guy was walked into the end zone with three blockers like he was the President of the United States coming through the freaking town with three cars in front of him. It was a joke watching that play. I don't understand how the Giants could watch that play and take themselves seriously. It's embarrassing, man. And listen, if you're going to be like what you just said, run all these bare fronts, and you know coming in with Patrick Graham, you're going to want to run these bare fronts and stop up the A-gap, don't you think it's really important to prioritize getting second-level defenders when you're going to be playing that style of defense? Don't you think it's super important to get guys that second and third level who can freaking stop plays when they're, I mean, do you think teams are just going to run the A-gap on you all game, or do you think they're going to adjust to what you're doing and hit you on the outside?
I think that's just why usually that strong side, the 4-I in the bear, I guess you can from, is more just tight because it's not a true traditional bear, plays a little bit towards the 4-I and attacks outside to kind of help compensate for the strength, but it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just didn't matter, especially with that offensive line.
Yeah, with that offensive line, it's, you're neutralized. When you have this, it's just not enough to have the interior defensive line be your only real true roster strength. 3 years into regime, they need more. I get it, he's got unlucky on some of these picks. I get it, we're still giving excuses for guys like Hernandez, which I'm running real low on. I know you're still there, Nick, and I get it. He's played with trash next to him. But if he was really fucking good, like Quentin Nelson plays with good players next to him, so it's not a good example. But like, he's making mistakes still, and I know he's solid. He's still but they don't need solid out of him. They need more than solid. And again, that 2019 class, that's the crown jewel. It's supposed to be the crown jewel. Even though he dumped that top 65 pick on Leonard Williams, an impending free agent who he no doubtedly could have signed, or they could have just signed Hargrave or plenty of other IDLs or traded a fifth. Like, you don't need to panic trade for an IDL at any point like he did. Then maybe they could have had somebody there that could have made a difference. But right now, the 2019 class, which really needed to, is not making enough of a difference, Nick, on this roster. And we're not going to get into judging the 2020 class yet. We have an offensive tackle who's playing his third career game with no training camp, a safety who got unlucky with the injury, and another developmental tackle is their first three picks. Holmes is out there. He's made a few mistakes. He's made a few good plays. No, nothing to judge there. We can't judge this class yet by any means. And me and Nick are also very high on this class. So we'll see what happens there. But 3 years into regime, man, I'm out of excuses. I think I am past the point, unredeemable. Gettleman has got to go. I don't think he's going to go midseason. I don't think he should go midseason. That's not how NFL teams do it. But I'm done with Gettleman. I think he'll, you know, we've talked about this off pod. I think we'll both think he'll kind of retire. But for me, the excuses are over. I'm done. That's it. Get him out.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to really stick up for him at the moment, nor am I trying to. But I do feel like, yeah, he'll do the retirement thing. But that begs the question, is it just Kevin Abrams that's going to step up, or Chris Pettit, or Petit, or however you say his last name, and then you can just kind of keep this similar kind of mindset in-house. Now, I'm not, I don't want to like put anything negative on those two and say that they have the same mindset as Gettleman. I'm sure they have a different approach to things, which I feel like is what the Giants need. But the Giants are an organization that doesn't usually go outside of their walls to bring in a replacement.
So, yeah.
So that you look at it and you say, is it just going to be Abrams that takes over this job? And that's what I'm kind of expecting, to be honest. And I just hope that Abrams, being a younger guy, maybe not as stubborn, will have a different way of valuing assets. Because that, to me, I think is the biggest issue with Dave Gettleman.
Yeah, I completely agree. The process is the biggest issue here. From both the standpoint of he doesn't value trading back in the draft enough, and the value of that, and the obvious economic studies have shown it, and he overvalues interior defensive linemen and running backs. That those two things are very obvious at this point. Those are the two positions you really can't afford to overvalue in today's NFL, and yet he does. So I agree, if somebody brings a fresh opinion, okay, maybe, but I think they're at the point where they need to go outside the organization, and I think Judge should have a big influence on this. And I know he comes from New England, and I want to see more of that New England style from him. I want to see, you know, some, you know, the thing they did with Golden, for example, that was interesting. I wonder if Judge had any kind of wrinkle there. They kind of got Golden cheap and using a weird wrinkle in the NFL rules, just those little things. But, you know, there are potential guys that they can look into outside of the organization. It doesn't just have to be recycle, 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 stay within the organization. So I'll be looking out for that. And interesting to see. That's the next big question right now for the Giants. You know, will they look outside the organization, or will they stay in? Because we know one thing about this Giants team and the ownership, which we both, I think, agree is partly to blame for all of this.
That's a whole other question, too, yeah. Dan, is how – I didn't mean to cut you off, but – what was the agreement between Dave Gettleman and John Mara when Dave Gettleman first took the job over?
Right.
And if it was, hey, we're going to try to extend Eli's career and get another Super Bowl, it's like, how much blame do you assign to the feet of Gettleman?
Sure.
Now that, and I'm not trying to stick up for Gettleman, I'm just kind of trying to put that out there, because I do feel like that was something that Mara felt strongly about. And adding someone like Saquon Barkley really helped, obviously, Eli Manning in his waning years, because before that, the Giants really didn't have that great of a rushing tack whatsoever.
But that, see, I just, I don't like I'll never agree with that. It's not only the process that's weird. I just don't believe adding a running back helps your rushing attack. It really didn't. I mean, he made some big plays his rookie year. They lost a million games. He made some big plays. Line is what, your offensive line is what makes a running attack. It's never been about the running back. It just never has, and it never really will be. I mean, yeah, Barkley's awesome. He's cool. He makes some splash plays that can sometimes change games against crap teams. Like, he won a couple, single-handedly won that Redskins game a couple years ago, and the Bears game when they played Chase Daniel, who was like a backup quarterback playing that year. Like, he's won some games against crap teams with some big plays, but it's not enough. And again, I have heard off record that Gettleman wanted to move on from Eli quicker than he was able to because ownership was very strong in this. I understand the Maras never wanted to really move on from Eli until they really were forced to, and that goes beyond football. I get that, and I'm not going to fully blame them. I'm not going to fully kill them for that, but at the same time, they need to be held accountable for where this franchise is at. They need to be held accountable for allowing their GM, even aside from the whole let's build for the last years of Eli, to go this route of pouring all these assets into interior defensive line in today's NFL, which never really made too much sense, but was like, okay, you know, maybe we'll be okay with this, whatever. And then going running back instead of going defensive end there, Bradley Chubb, who I didn't even want. I wasn't a big fan of Chubb as a prospect. But you know what you could have done? You could have just said, today's NFL, we're undervaluing guards. Because honestly, dude, people say you can't take an offensive guard in the top 10 or the top 6. Why not? Quentin Nelson was the most surefire prospect evaluation since I've done this thing. He literally entered the NFL and almost immediately became the best guard in the entire NFL. Like, if you're going to get the best guard in the entire NFL, you can take a guard in the top 6 or the top 10, okay? I'll make the argument any day of the week that an offensive guard has a bigger impact on wins and losses than a freaking running back. I'll say that any day of the week. And you look at the 49ers right now, they ran the ball great today. You know who they ran it with? Jeff Wilson, Jerick McKinnon, And was Jermichael Hasty gotten some snaps in there? I mean, James Robinson for the Jaguars looks like one of the best running backs in the league, undrafted free agent. Give me a break with this stuff. Everyone knows that. This is not rocket science that you don't need, that running backs can be found in many places, and that an offensive line, and the running back is only as good as offensive line. Everyone knew that. So I don't buy into that you can't draft a guard there. And the Colts didn't buy into it either. You know what the Colts did? The Colts had the pick one after the Giants that year, number three. Giants had number two. So the Giants could have easily made this trade based on that logic. Obviously, any team would rather the number two pick than number three pick. They traded number three for number six and then three early second rounders. They ended up taking Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, who I talked about earlier on this podcast, after Will Hernandez. Now they have an unreal left guard, an unreal right tackle. And then they took Darius Leonard, one of their picks, who's one of the best linebackers in the NFL. And then I forgot who their last pick was.
Kamoko Touré,
who's like a really pretty solid situational pass rusher for them when healthy. He's had injury problems. But either way, they got... Imagine if the Giants just did that. Like, imagine what this team would look like right now with Quentin Nelson at left guard, Braden Smith at right tackle, and Darius Leonard at the second level of this defense next to Blake Martinez. Like, there's no argument that can be made with any logic whatsoever that the route they chose with Barkley and Hernandez was better than that route. There's no logic. There's nothing. There's nothing that says it. There's nothing that will ever say it.
You're not wrong, but I don't know if those players would be the players that they are today under the guidance of what the Giants had as leadership.
And that's fair.
Yeah.
With Hal Hunter in as offensive line coach. I totally get it.
Those kind of things. But it's hard to disagree with you. And it's the same stuff that, I mean, we were saying back when Dave Gettleman drafted. I remember I was in a room with a bunch of my friends and the Giants selected Saquon Barkley, and I was so furious. And I was like sitting there, like, it was so awkward because I'm praising Saquon Barkley. I'm like, yeah, he's such a good running back, but this is just not how you build a team. And my friends were just like, Nick, like, shut up, man. Like, what are you talking about? But I was like, no, dude, like, you don't understand. And then Barkley ends up going to have the rookie season that he has, and I'm still sitting there saying, like, no, I stand 100% by it. They thought I was like being stubborn, but I'm just like, no, you just do not build your team this way. I just never really bought into that. And I mean, sadly, it just seems like that we're proven right here.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Again, they won four games with him when he had that amazing rookie season. And guess what, Nick? I know this is a bit of a hot take maybe, but I'm not even so certain that it was the hand of God. As an athlete, sure, he was touched by the hand of God. That's obvious. You can look at the combine numbers. You can look at the film. You can look at the highlights. It doesn't take much to see that he's one of the most athletic, the best athletes to ever play the position. I think it's fair to say. But I don't think he's that nuanced as a running back. Watch Nick Chubb run the football. Go ahead. Watch Nick Chubb. Next time you guys are watching football, watch how Nick Chubb runs between the tackles. Do you think Barkley does that as well? Do you think Barkley reads his blocks as well? Do you think Barkley makes the necessary cuts between the tackles to pick up every single yard that he possibly can to sap up the most of every single touch? I don't. I think he bounces a lot of runs outside. I think he had that exact problem at Penn State. I think he played in a shotgun system at Penn State that's nothing like what he plays in the NFL. And I don't think he's actually that amazing of an in-between tackles runner. I'll say it on this pod. I've said it before. And yeah, he still is an amazing athlete. Great. Should be better, should be a weapon in the passing game, which the Giants somehow never figured out. And still makes unbelievable plays by forcing missed tackles and by breaking away with his speed. So he's still a great prospect and had that season, but... You know, it's not even as can't miss as it should have been at two to me. It's like that wasn't Adrian Peterson to me.
Even if it was, it's still not worth it.
It's
just an opportunity cost. You have to consider every avenue, and I think it was apparent that Dave Gettleman didn't. He just didn't. I mean, who knows who would have traded what for Sam Darnold when everyone thought Sam Darnold was going one, and the Giants didn't even take the time to investigate that. And the Jets had the next pick, and the Jets pulled the trigger like that.
Right.
So what would have happened if the Giants did take the time to investigate?
Yeah, what happens if the Giants take a call? Or what happens if the Giants are savvy enough to call the Jets and be like, we're getting this offer. You guys want to do anything about it? And then maybe the Jets do a panic move like the guy from Chicago did. What's his name?
Ryan Pace,
when he traded one pick up to make sure he gets Mitchell Trubisky. Obviously one of the most laughably...
Stinky Mitch.
laughably bad moves in NFL history. But it was a panic move that sometimes GMs will make. It's a really high, intense process. The guy Gettleman had 10 minutes to work with, and he used absolutely zero of the 10 minutes. He hung out in the room for 5 minutes laughing with his buddies about how lucky they were to get Saquon Barkley. Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like, it's insanity. And it happened, and we said, okay, because he had the rookie of the year season. Like, that mattered. They still won four games. You know, it wasn't like Nick Bosa's season last year where he kind of completely transformed that 49ers defense by adding that edge presence and then making everyone look better. DeForest Buckner. DeForest Buckner wasn't really a household name until last year when he played with Nick Bosa. And he is an excellent player, but it just goes to show what an edge can do for an interior defensive lineman. But Barkley didn't really do that. Eli didn't play much better that season. The receivers and the offensive line didn't play much better that season. They didn't get much from the tight end that season, Evan Ingram. So it really didn't work out like that. Individually, he was awesome. But again, it's tough, Nick. And, you know, I look at the overall thing of where this team's at, and I'm really worried because I said, like, I thought they were moving in the right direction. I really felt that way, and I know you did too. And now I'm not sure.
It's hard to say that they are after these three losses. And this is a long season, and I guess if we're going to shine any positive light on this, which it's very, very hard to do because this is an incredibly dim situation, is the fact that this team might not have as much continuity as they should have because of how the offseason transpired. But every team in the NFL kind of has that excuse.
Right.
It's just this was a new team with new coaches and a lot of new players and new leadership in the players, because some of the leaders on this team are guys who have been here for 5 minutes, been here for a cup of coffee, like Blake Martinez, who's a veteran leader, James Bradberry, who's a veteran leader. These guys have been Giants for only a few months. Now, that's, I guess, one thing you could, I guess, point to as maybe it can turn around. But after this loss, it's hard to find anything positive with this team.
Yeah, it really is. And obviously, this is not our traditional reaction podcast. We're not reacting much to what we saw on the field. There's really not too much to react to. When we go over the All-22, that's when we'll get into the important stuff like Daniel Jones and his development, because that's obviously important to this franchise, Andrew Thomas and his development, and all the young potential building blocks on this roster. But to be honest, it's not safe to say, but it's at least worth saying that there's not enough. There's not as many building blocks right now as there should be for this team 3 years into a new regime, with consistently picking in the top six. Three straight years in a row, every single pick they had in each round was in the top six. There needs to be way more building blocks right now than there currently are on this roster. This should not be a Jets-esque roster bad. And it's kind of getting to that point. They have like one position of strength, really. Like, it's just, it's tough. Like, as far as depth goes, I mean, obviously they have a really good CB1 and Bradberry. We can tell that much. But I don't know, Nick. I feel like I just rallied off a lot. I had to get a lot off my chest. I'm fired up. I'm really not happy with this. I was just hoping, all out hope, that this team was going to take a step forward. Do you want to get something off your chest? Reel off. Now's the time. Let the fans know where you stand with the Giants and if there's anything else.
No, I mean, I'm waiting for the All-22 because I want to see what Garrett and, more specifically, Patrick Graham did to kind of combat what the 49ers were doing. Because the 49ers seemed like they had an answer for absolutely everything. Crazy. And it's so apparent that Jason Garrett and his little button hooks, and we talked about them on the podcast, how Evan Ingram runs a little outside 5 yard, 6 yard button hook, and Fred Warner knew it was coming.
Yep.
Knew it was coming. Why don't you gas that? Why don't you fake that? Just run the quick button hook, have them bite down, and then just do another route right around it. You can go vertical, you can go horizontal, you can break in, you can break out. Just add that manipulation, but in order to do that, you need protection. That's one thing you definitely need. Mm-hmm. And the Giants don't seem like they're getting the best out of that as well. I also really want to look into Andrew Thomas, see how he did in this game. He really struggled in week 2. He did. This game, it didn't seem like as much, but I haven't had a chance to evaluate the film. I mean, you did a pretty good job articulating the state of the New York Giants right now, and it's bleak, but it's going to be a long season, man. It's going to be a long season, and we have to hopefully this team can come out and show some heart and some resilience in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and God forbid they use their 4-4-2 40-yard dash tight end to run a vertical route. God forbid. And God forbid they go back to what worked in the first 2 weeks, which is 7-man protections occasionally to try to dial up some vertical routes, because we're certainly not seeing enough of that. And we obviously have to check the tape, Nick, but as far as just the total pressures go recorded by PFF, I believe I saw an ugly stat that Andrew Thomas might have already allowed the most pressures in the NFL through 3 weeks. So not exactly what you want to see there. Obviously, he's a rookie. again, I'm not gonna dial back on this, but I will stand by my original take that he was my OT4 in this class. I did not like him. I thought the two for sure that I would have taken over him were Wills and Becton. I understood the case to take him over Wirfs for sure. He was super raw, and I still think Thomas is going to be a solid player for the Giants. I do not know if I see all pro there. I do not know if I ever see that, and when you're taking four, it's again, it's an asset thing. I don't know if you want a solid left tackle. I think you need a little bit more than that. I know the Jets swung for a little bit more than that. I know the Browns did, and he's been really good so far, Wills. And I haven't read or heard much from Wirfs, but again, we're going to have to see the film to know, but he's obviously going to have to improve, and the Giants are going to have to do more. All right, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in to the Big Blue Banter podcast. We're still going to be here. We're still going to be doing it. We're still going to be rolling through this 2020 season. Stick with us because you still want to know about the development of these players. It's going to be super important. It's not like you can just do Madden mode and restart any kind of roster from scratch. These are the guys they have. They need to improve. They need to build on them. The coaching is really important. We got to see if Garrett's going to be a guy that they can win with. We got to see if Graham's going to be a guy they can win with. So we'll tackle all of that in the coming weeks.
I know I'm going to sound ridiculous saying this, but it is the truth. The Giants are only one game out of first place because the NFC East is totally abysmal at the moment. But this division sucks. The Giants suck. The crazier things have happened, is what I'm
saying. Crazier things have definitely happened. I mean, we saw the Seahawks win a division at 7-9 and then win a playoff game.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Beast mode.
Yeah, I mean, even from that standpoint, the Giants are somehow still in the playoff race because they're only one game back in the East, and the Eagles are absolute trash right now. That was one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen, the way they played that end of that game, the lack of confidence they've shown in Wentz, and really how poorly Wentz has played. Washington football team, nothing to worry about with Dwayne Haskins at quarterback. I think that's pretty clear. And then the Cowboys. The Cowboys are the best team in the division, but they're also a very far from complete team. So you never know. Crazier things have happened, but they're going to obviously have to play better than they did today.
No doubt, man.
All right, on that note, we'll speak to you later. And I'm still going to keep it and end it on this, Nick. Go Giants.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team and player
and coaching props,
BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.